This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. This is David Marchik. I'm head of external affairs at Carlisle. And today we're joined by Alan Polt and Pete Clare, who co-head Carlisle's U.S. buyout team. They've both been at Carlisle for 21 years and run essentially Carlisle's largest business. So gentlemen, thanks for being here. Let me start with Pete. You just raised your sixth U.S. buyout fund. Carlisle's sixth U.S. buyout fund is $13 billion. It's one of the larger funds that has been raised in recent years in the industry. What's your strategy or approach to putting that money to work and generating attractive returns for our investors?
Well, we're fortunate that the main focus of our fund is on the United States. And right now, the United States is a very attractive market to be investing in. There's a lot of good things happening in the economy. The energy boom is lowering the cost of manufacturing in the U.S. Housing's recovering. The U.S. consumer is very healthy. So it's a great market to invest in. Our whole strategy for investing is built around having deep industry expertise across six industry verticals, and using all that knowledge about those industries to identify the most attractive companies to invest in and then apply operational improvement to accelerate the growth rates of those companies.
So, Pete, you mentioned six sectors. Alan, can you just give us a snapshot of how your team is organized and what industries you pursue?
Yes, the six primary sectors are consumer retail, healthcare, telecom and media, industrial, aerospace, defense, government services, and technology. Those six sector heads and Pete and I have an average tenure at Carlisle of about 16 years and average private equity experience of just about 20 years. So it's a very experienced team.
So Alan, you've been doing this for more than 20 years. How would you describe today's investment environment in terms of pursuing new investments, and how does it compare to different cycles that you've seen over the years in your experience?
Well, I've always felt it's a very competitive industry. There has been lots of capital chasing opportunities for a long, long time. And valuations go up and valuations go down. Right now, we have an interesting combination of high prices and very cheap and extensive bank financing, bank term facilities, and the high yield market. Cheap financing, a lot of debt available, tends to drive prices up. But I would also say it's very hard to look at charts that show average multiples, because averages are in some ways not all that meaningful, because it really depends on the particular industry and the particular company you're dealing with. So yes, prices look a little higher. In deals we've recently looked at, they certainly were higher, but hard to make broad assessments, because some deals will always be expensive and some industries may not be.
Following up on that, Pete, which industries are of greatest interest to you right now and why?
Well, clearly there's the handful of industries that we have a lot of interest in right now. I mentioned earlier that clearly the energy boom in the U.S. is driving a tremendous amount of spending on exploration, production, transportation, processing, refining of energy. And there's a tremendous amount of products and services that get pulled into supporting all that. So our industrial team is very busy looking at ways to invest in support of that trend. I'd say that's also creating a second opportunity in terms of lower energy costs for the U.S., which is lowering manufacturing costs in the U.S., which I think is going to lead to a resurgence in growth in manufacturing in the U.S. So that's a trend that we're focused on. Third area would be healthcare, where purely just through the aging demographics of the U.S., that's a market that is likely to see significant growth over the next 10 years. That's also true in emerging markets for very, very different reasons. There's opportunities for us to team with our sister funds around the world to invest in healthcare in emerging markets, where the growth in the middle class and the growth in incomes is leading to a much higher level of spending on healthcare outside the U.S. A fourth area is consumer. For U.S. consumers who have jobs today, they are financially very healthy, and the overall levels of household debt have declined substantially. So that makes the U.S. consumer ready to spend again, and that's a trend that we want to invest behind as well.
One of the more recent consumer deals which caught a lot of attention was our investment in Beats, the headphone electronics company. Alan, what made that an attractive investment for us? And it was a minority investment, which is a little different than what we normally do. Why did we pursue that investment?
Beats was an unusual deal, particularly for Carlyle. We have certainly over the last 8 years done a lot more in the consumer area. I think it was a very creative deal. It was a company that is very creative in the products that they design, in the technology that they use. This is high quality headphones. They do other types of audio accessories. It was started years ago by Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine, who was a very well-known music recording executive. It's a very strong business, $1 billion in revenue, very profitable. And we think that with Carlyle's consumer experience, as well as our global reach around the world, we can significantly help this business and take it to the next step.
So you have a pair of Beats and you wear them around the office now?
I have two pairs of Beats. I have a pair of over-the-ear headphones, and I have earbuds, but I also have the pill, which is a small speaker that is quite interesting.
And do your kids think you're a little cooler now that you wear these Beats around?
Now, take a lot more than that.
And we've been selling a lot as well. I mean, prices are expensive. The stock market is up. Is this an unusually attractive time to exit transactions, Pete?
I'd say, you know, when we reach the point of exit, it really reflects the success we've had in improving and building a business. So that's our goal with every company, to make it stronger than it was before we invested in it. And our business is not about market timing. It's about building and improving businesses. So what you see in the recent sales and recent public offerings we've done, a reflection of getting to that point of maturity in executing the plan we had for that business, growing it, making it stronger, and then being able to realize that value and return it to our shareholders.
And we'll often take a company public, but we'll still hold the stock for quite some time. Maybe you could describe how we approach an IPO and how we think about public offerings as part of the value creation process.
Right. It's a great point, because typically for the businesses that we invest in, at the time of the IPO, we sell typically very little or a small amount of our ownership, and that just begins a process which typically will take around 3 or 4 years to fully exit that business. We stay as heavily engaged with the businesses once they're public as we do when they're private. So it's just the beginning of a process for us that's likely going to take several years.
Pete, let's talk about value creation, a subject you talked about at our recent Investor Day. When you look at how we create value in the companies in which we invest, does most of the value come from financial engineering, multiple expansion, EBITDA growth? How does our typical portfolio company grow?
It's a very interesting question, because even though we live in this world where we have generally low rates of GDP growth, the vast majority of the returns and the gains that we earn for our investors comes from real earnings growth inside the companies we invest in. If you look at our last two funds, over 70% of all the gains that we've generated have come from real earnings growth. A little over 20% has come from using the cash flow of the businesses to pay down debt. And generally somewhere between 0 and 10% comes from multiple expansion. So not very much, which is really a reflection that the U.S. market is competitive and efficient. We're going to have to pay a fair price to buy these companies, and we can't generate much gain over the life of a fund from buying low and selling high. So all of our focus is on growth, and how are we going to get that growth, and is this business positioned for growth, or how can we better position it to realize that growth? And within any company that we invest in, typically there are three big drivers of the growth that we can achieve in those businesses. The first is just organic growth we're going to get in that sector. So we want to invest in businesses which serve growing end markets. The second big source of growth is operational improvement. So how can we help that company run more efficiently? What can we do to improve its operations to help them ultimately realize stronger profit margins? And the third big area of growth, and getting to be a more and more common theme in the investments we make, is how we can help the companies in the U.S. expand internationally, and how we draw upon our partners around the world and our team in China and Brazil and other fast-growing markets in the world to help our U.S. companies to penetrate those markets. And it's really a combination of all three of those things we need to drive the growth in the businesses.
And one of the value creation strategies we pursue is by using or relying on what we call operating executives. Alan, can you describe who these people are, what they do, and how they're helpful for our companies that we own?
Yes. One must remember that most of us are financial executives. We're quite good at investing and at financing those investments and exiting those investments. But except for a handful of people within the firm, we are not what I would call true operating executives, where we've run the plant floor, we've been on multiple sales calls. It's just a different skill set. And we believe that in coming up with good value creation plans, you need that talent. So we have been using for many years operating executives who help us not only source transactions, but diligence those transactions. And then once we own it, they're part of the governance of those investments. It's many times sitting on the board of directors. Other times they may even step into the role as the chief executive officer if necessary. And we have about 15 operating executives today in U.S. buyout. And then there are a handful of other operating executives in other parts of the world. But they're an invaluable asset to us, as Pete talked about, in creating value. If you're going to pay more in a competitive process on a particular investment, you should be able to do more, because just paying more is not necessarily the recipe for the kind of returns we're looking for. The operating executives, for the most part, are former executives, mostly CEOs, but it could be COOs or CFOs, who many of them have had full careers running companies and have now decided to step back. And instead, they devote anywhere between 25% of their time to maybe as much as 90% of their time working with Carlyle and Carlyle portfolio companies. What they all have in common is they were all very successful at what they did in the businesses that they ran.
Pete, at our recent Investor Day, you talked about the three different types of deals we pursue: market leaders, focused change, and major transformation. Can you walk us through those three types of strategies and maybe give an example in each?
Sure. And obviously, the classifications here are a little bit subjective, but to me, it's the easiest way to communicate the kinds of deals that we do. So the market leaders are companies that are real leaders in their industries. I call them the category killers. Great businesses. They're typically run by great management teams. And when we invest in them, we're largely backing the existing strategy for that business. There's always one or two places where we can help to improve those businesses, but that company is really continuing to do what it's always done to grow and take market share and be successful. Two great examples. One would be Booz Allen in the government services sector, a business that had grown 15% a year for over 20 years before we owned it. They continued that after we owned it. We did some work with them to help improve profit margins, and it's really been a great company, a great investment for us. Second example would be Allison Transmission, a company which is really the industry leader in high-tech, high-end transmissions for trucks and off-road equipment and military vehicles, so operating very much at the high end of what they do. It's the technology that goes into that that makes them such a great company, but also a great investment. The second category I always refer to as focused change. These are good businesses, also generally run by great management teams, but the organic growth rate inherent in these businesses is not high enough for us to get to the rates of return we've promised our investors. So in these businesses, we acquire the company and then set off to make one or two very significant changes to how the business operates in order to accelerate the growth rate. A great example would be a company called MultiPlan, which was the largest independent PPO network, so healthcare service provider in the country, run by a great CEO. But they were only going to grow with employment growth in the U.S., which typically is 2 or 3%. But we acquired the company, the MultiPlan set off to acquire several competitors, consolidate them into their business. And as they did that, they got tremendous synergies and scale benefits, both on the cost side, but also in the services they could provide their customers, which helped that company to accelerate its growth rate. Second example there would be Nature's Bounty, or NBTY, a vitamin and supplement manufacturer, which great products serving an end market that's growing. You know, Americans are very, very focused on wellness and prevention and staying healthy. But it was a company that had an area for a lot of operational improvement internally, making better decisions about what to insource and outsource, how much manufacturing capacity they needed. And there we've set off on a path to improve how that company operates. Third category are what I refer to as major transformations. And these are what people typically think of in buyouts, which are companies that have been undermanaged prior to our acquiring the businesses, where we see opportunities for dramatic improvements. A great example would be a company called Philosophy, which sold consumer products, skincare products, was founded by a woman who developed a fantastic brand, but really had only one main channel to market when we first invested. That was through infomercials. Given the strength of the brand, our consumer team identified that this product had the opportunity to be sold through a much wider set of distribution channels. We invested in the business, invested heavily in its internal systems, in its supply chain, in its distribution centers to get it ready to expand its distribution channels, and then set off on a path to introduce the product into department stores, more retailers, and then an online direct channel, and ultimately, you know, doubled its distribution. It was a great success, but took a lot of work to make all those changes inside that business.
So, Alan, in a typical year, you will invest in between 2 and 4 transactions.
Yeah.
In your fund. How many different deal opportunities does your team look at annually, and how is that filtered down to actually you pursuing 2 to 4?
The team will look at several hundred deals a year in total. What comes to Pete or I might get narrowed to somewhere between 50 to 75. And then maybe that gets narrowed to 20 transactions that will make it to the final investment committee, and then maybe you get a 1 out of 5 shot to a 1 out of 4 shot in actually being successful on that transaction, which gets you to trying to do 2 to 4, 3 to 4 transactions a year.
Wow, that's amazing.
I don't know if that sounds...
Pete, you've been at this for 20 plus years. You obviously have had a very successful track record. Presumably, there have been a mistake or two along the way. What lessons have you learned from some of the less successful investments, and what do you want to avoid in the future?
Yeah, good question in terms of where we've made our mistakes. One is going into sectors we really didn't know very well. And there's no doubt that, you know, you're taking a lot more risk when you don't have deep industry and sector knowledge. You're operating further out on the risk spectrum. We have had more mistakes there.
Alan and Pete, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on your new fund and the investment opportunities in the United States. And thanks for listening to Carlyle ValueCast.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.